Today, answers matter more than ever before. That's why IBM is helping businesses manage customer questions with Watson Assistant. It's conversational AI designed to work for any industry. Let's put smart to work. Visit ibm.com/Watson Assistant.
NFL Live, the Saints and Jameis Winston make it official, but did Winston take little, too little, to go to New Orleans? And what does that mean for Cam Newton's market? The Eagles surprised us when they opted for Jalen Hurts in the draft. Dan Orlovsky will show us how their offense might look with Hurts in the fold. And we get the behind-the-scenes story of one of the biggest stories of the draft, the biggest stars, I should say, and that would be Bill Belichick's dog, Nike. Hello, everybody. Happy to have you with us. Here with me, I'm Wendy Nix with the aforementioned Dan Orlovsky, Mike Tannenbaum, and Jeff Darlington. We start with Jameis Winston. After leading the league in passing yards and also interceptions, Winston is now officially a member of the New Orleans Saints. He signed a one-year deal worth just over $1 million, according to our Field Yates. Here is Jameis on his decision to sign with the Saints.
Being a part of New Orleans Saints, being apart with Drew Brees, Taysom Hill, Sean Payton. When you think about that room, I mean, that's like a Harvard education in quarterback school. I wanted to put my ego aside, put the money to aside, and think about my family, think about my career. It was no better position than to be in the same room with someone that I really looked up to, someone that I admired since I've been playing this game, and Drew Brees.
Saints quarterback Drew Brees to our Saints reporter Mike Triplett. Excited to have him in the quarterback room. He's got a lot of talent and a bright future. I've heard a lot of good things about his work ethic and his love of the game. We take a look at the financial aspects of the deal. Jameis will be making, like I said, $1.1 million this season and some incentives to make another $3.4 million. He's based currently 51st among quarterbacks and is less than Dwayne Haskins and DeShone Kizer, who have gone a combined 2-20 in their NFL careers. Jeff Darlington, how did this deal come together?
Well, it's exactly what Jameis just said. He recognized the situation. He saw his opportunities that weren't necessarily that thorough throughout the league. And he realized that, hey, if I'm going to go about getting back to being a starting quarterback this league, I have two paths that I could potentially take. I can go the path in which Ryan Tannehill took, where you take your shot with a team that ultimately maybe banks on the current starter not ultimately succeeding and you take over and succeed in that role. Or you can go the other way, and that is sit behind somebody like Drew Brees, learn from him, and potentially, by the way, if Drew Brees winds up finishing his career at the end of this year, that Saints job is open. So it's a one-year tryout, or you rehabilitate yourself from a character standpoint, from the interceptions, you try to kind of help your career out. And then at the end of the year, you start to survey the landscape. He took the latter and ultimately decided to put money aside to do so.
All right, Dan, in your estimation, a smart move by Jameis Winston to look at the intangibles rather than the dollars?
No, it's brilliant. And I've said for weeks now that Jameis needed to make the right decision, not the one that he wanted. I'm sure that Jameis wanted a starting quarterback opportunity and probably a decent chunk of money. But for him to show this maturity, this is probably his greatest mature moment when it comes to his career in the NFL. And for him to sit there and go, this is the best way for me to rewrite my career, to kind of start a new chapter and to go learn behind a guy like Sean Payton and go learn behind a guy like Drew Brees. And I've stated this, like on the surface level, Drew Brees and Jameis Winston aren't all that different as a player. They're both super aggressive with the football. Drew has just managed to value the football more. And that would be, you know, I would say there's two areas that Jameis can go there and learn right away, and you can watch his status in the NFL skyrocket. One, learn how Drew trains his body to muscle memory and progressions and get through progressions so he never panics with the football. We've all seen Drew Brees go through his warm-ups and throw the ball, and he gets to number two and then number three and number four, that he doesn't panic the football. So James, realize that you can play boring football and that's okay. A guy as accomplished and as talented as Drew Brees, taking 3- and 4-yard completions, checkdowns, throwing the ball away, Jameis could sit there and go and watch Drew Brees, a Hall of Famer, do that and realize, all right, I can do that as well. I can still be and play boring football. But it's a brilliant decision by Jameis.
Well, boring football isn't boring for long if you're winning, which is what happens when you take care of the football. Mike, long term, what could be the interest in Jameis Winston after the season? Can he follow in a Teddy Bridgewater, say, footsteps?
Yeah, just to piggyback on what the guys have already said, that's absolutely right. This year is an investment in his future, not only on the field and off the field. And we just saw Teddy Bridgewater, Wendy, as you alluded to, $21 million a year, three-year deal to be the quarterback of the Carolina Panthers. And if things go well for Jameis this year, he certainly could be in that position. And worst-case scenario, I see more of a Ryan Tannehill situation going back a year ago, where maybe it's 1A with someone like Marcus Mariota and the starter's not firmly entrenched. So I think he's going to be in a much better position a year from now. And fundamentally, if Drew Brees retires, why can't he just stay there and sign a comparable deal? So I think this is a great deal. It establishes his floor, and now it could really position him into the future in a really good situation.
And I'd say the best situation for this when it comes for Jameis is the fact that he doesn't have to have the pressure of going to win football games right away. Like, Jameis has never had the opportunity just to sit back and watch and not have to, like, win a game on Sundays. And so to have that pressure taken off of you while also trying to kind of retool your game, it'll be a big deal for him. We get asked all the time, like, do you think he'll start in the NFL again or not? Those really difficult questions. Him making this decision, I'd be more willing to bet that Jameis Winston becomes a starter in the NFL and a good one in the future rather than not taking advantage of this opportunity. So again, all in all, this is an awesome opportunity for him and the Saints.
I agree, Dan. Good for him and good for the Saints. He also, by the way, was introduced via Zoom, the way we do things these days. And according to our Mike Triplett, Jameis Winston begins his Zoom call with the New Orleans media with a "Who dat?" That's the first way to endear yourself to Who Dat Nation. To a former NFC South quarterback, Cam Newton, still out there. He's a free agent after playing only two games with the Panthers last season. That was due to a foot injury. The 2015 MVP has missed a total of 19 games in his career due to injury. So when you compare Cam to Jameis, Cam, roughly 4 years older, missed 16 more games due to injury than has Jameis and has lost his last eight starts. But in 2015, Newton led the Panthers to a Super Bowl, a 15-1 record, and he is Carolina's all-time leader in pass touchdowns and rushing touchdowns. So he does have an impressive resume. Jeff, how different is Cam's situation compared to that of Jameis Winston?
Completely different. And I think that there was one sort of underrated, maybe misunderstood narrative that existed when we talk about Jameis and Cam in the same breath about their sort of free agent aspirations. Now, Jameis Winston, first of all, was not dealing with any kind of injury history. And in this current climate where you can't get your own doctors to necessarily get their hands on these guys to find out exactly where things stand, it makes it very, very hesitant for GMs to sign these guys. The second factor here is money. Jameis was in a situation where he wasn't really being coveted with a massive market anyway. The Bucks, for instance, even before the Tom Brady stuff went down, didn't even want to franchise him because they didn't think that he was going to be worth $24 million with the transition tag. Cam Newton's in a different sort of world in that regard too. And then the final thing is the polarizing impact of the player on the locker room. Jameis, although maybe misunderstood from the standpoint of I understand why people question his character on the outside, given some of the transgressions that have happened with him. But on the inside, within a building, he is beloved. Guys really do think that he is the perfect teammate. Cam is a little more polarizing. When he comes into your locker room, it's going to have more of that Tim Tebow effect where the backup quarterback is going to steal some of that shine pretty frequently. So all of the factors considered, it's going to make it very complicated for Cam Newton. I wouldn't be surprised if this takes quite a bit longer before Newton does find a team.
Yeah, Jeff, you bring up good points, the difference of the players. It's important for us to remind everybody that Cam is not in his situation for lack of performance. You know, like, he's in his situation for teams not being able to know how healthy he is, because in 2018, you know, we always talk about 2015 with Cam, but 2018, he's playing MVP caliber football before the hit by TJ Watt on the shoulder, and then the performance drops down. And so there's a couple of really important questions that teams have to ask Cam Newton throughout this process. this. One, what's your expectation level for your role? Because to Jeff's point, there's not really any starting quarterback opportunities out there. So is he willing to come in and be a backup? And then two, what's your expectation with money? We just found out, Wendy, to your comment early, that Jameis has taken 1.1 this year. Is Cam willing to take that amount? And then the third question, and this would probably be the biggest one for me, is he still willing to be part of your run game? You know, because Cam Newton's really averaged over 100 carries a year for his career. And if Cam Newton's going to tell a team, yes, I feel good enough and I still want to be involved in the run game with the read and the zone read stuff, well, then that opens up his window for teams. More teams are going to be interested. If he says, no, I want no part of running anymore because what it did to my body, I'm strictly going to be used throwing the football, then you have to ask yourself, if you're a team, does that minimize him as a weapon? Because if it does, then his team shrink. I still think that there's teams out there that should be interested in Cam. I look at Denver, they should be interested. I look at Pittsburgh, they should be interested. I would throw Tennessee in the mix, Seattle, Dallas. All those teams can upgrade their backup quarterback position because they're playoff contending football teams. So I agree that it'll probably take through the summer, but there are some good questions that have to be.
All right, Mike, so you heard some suggestions. Where could you see Cam ultimately ending up?
Yeah, I appreciate everything Dan just said, and I'm just going to put them all to the side. I would really focus in on New England, and here's why. Coach Belichick is 0-2 against Cam Newton. And I know from a scheme standpoint, a system standpoint, it's a million miles from what Jared Stidham does well. It's obviously way different than what Tom Brady did for 20-plus years. So, but what he does do is he gives you another option on offense. And when you look at what he's done over the course of his career, he's averaged 10 wins a season, 33 total touchdowns. He would come in, and if he was healthy today, he would be the best quarterback to win a game in the AFC East. I'm not saying for the next 10 years now that you have Tua or Sam Darnold or even Josh Allen, but today he would be the best quarterback in the division. So I think that's an intriguing option. Now, look, New England's been convicted about Jared Stidham. They cut Brian Hoyer going back to last Labor Day. That said a lot about what they thought of Stidham coming out of his rookie training camp. But the fact that he's out there, one of the hallmarks of what Coach Belichick's done in New England is he's opportunistic. This is way too talented of a player that's accomplished so much for him to still be out there. And it wouldn't shock me to see New England talk to him at some point in the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, I guess the thing for me, Mike T, would be if Cam goes, no, I don't want to run anymore. And then New England brings him in and he doesn't want to be a running quarterback anymore. So they don't have really any kind of weapon on the outside to throw the football with. And now you're telling Jared Stidham, like, hey, stunting your growth. If you're going to give him an opportunity to be your guy, give him the opportunity to be your guy, because it doesn't fit schematically. They'd have to scrap what they've done for the last 20 years. And I know Josh McDaniels had success with Tim Tebow, but that's one, because Tebow was a big time runner. And two, they had Eric Decker and Demaryius Thomas on the outside to throw the football to. So I don't have the correlation with New England, respectfully, with New England and Cam. I think some of those other teams are more likely.
All right, the Cam Newton watch continues, gentlemen. We'll continue to talk about it. The Titans made some big moves this offseason, signing quarterback Ryan Tannehill to a 4-year, $91 million guaranteed extension. In addition to that, they placed the franchise tag on running back Derrick Henry. He led the league in rushing last season, still working on a long-term deal before that July 15th deadline. And in the draft, they filled the hole left by Jack Conklin by taking Georgia offensive tackle Isaiah Wilson in the first round. Wilson, one of four SEC players to record 500 blocks and not a single penalty. We will say hello now to Titans GM and Executive Vice President John Robinson. John, we've had a few days now to breathe, to take stock of what every team did in the draft. How would you grade the way the Titans made out?
Well, we set out, going into the weekend to add players at certain positions. There were certain positions that we would have liked to add it as well, but we just didn't have enough picks. But feel really, really good about the group that we were able to add, you know, starting with big Isaiah there in the first round. Really got to know him as a person, extremely bright. He's a huge man. He'll fill in there for us and it'll help us on the right side. Christian Fulton there in the second round, and then Darrington Evans in the third round. Both of those guys, Darrington was an extremely productive player. And Christian had a ton of pass breakups and a national championship to boot.
I mentioned earlier that you signed Ryan Tannehill to a long-term extension. John, when did you know that he was the right guy and the right fit to be the quarterback of your future?
Yeah, he was a guy that, I mean, obviously last year we when we did the trade with Miami and added him to the team, I've always liked his skill set, and hadn't really got a chance to meet him. I was in New England when he was drafted, and he went really, really high. But admired his skill set for a long time down in there in Miami. So when we got a chance to add to our football team, and the more that we were around him, and you could see when we made the change there at quarterback, we kind of picked up some steam there and got on a roll, and just really felt good about making that commitment to him. He embodies everything that we're looking for in a player.
John, you mentioned New England. Tom Brady was available during this process as well. I think we may have talked about it more than you did, but was there any validity to the idea of bringing in Tom Brady?
Well, I think at the end of the day, we had, Ryan was our guy. We had set out, and he had earned our respect. He had earned his teammates' respect, the city of Nashville, for what he was able to do, after that Denver game and push us into the postseason. We got a chance. We got in. We had an opportunity. And then to make a run, to make it all the way up to the AFC Championship game, I think that he earned, he earned the right to be our quarterback.
A big part of your offense as well was Derrick Henry. He has now, he will operate under the franchise tag. What's the thought process in terms of a long-term extension, and what can we expect maybe before that July 15th deadline?
Yeah, we've had some discussions with his representatives back and forth, going all the way back to, once the season was kind of winding down through the combine, through the start of free agency, just couldn't find a kind of a common ground there. But I've already spoken to his reps a couple times, and we're going to get back working on this thing, now that the draft's over. He's a big part of our offense, and, we want to keep him in Nashville for a long time.
John, everybody's adjusting, I think, and operating differently under this current climate. The Saints have canceled their offseason program. Some teams are going ahead and doing it virtually. What do you plan to do, and what can we expect between now and when we do return to some kind of physical environment?
Yeah, so we've pushed all of the iPads out to our players. Our coaches are meeting with them virtually. We've started our virtual offseason program. We let the position group leaders kind of pick the times, and they're responsible for getting the guys in there. It's voluntary, but it's a chance to start to go over the X's and O's, put the plays in offensively, defensively, and special teams with our guys. Those have gone really, really good so far. And whenever we can get back, hopefully it's sooner rather than later, out on the grass, we're super excited to get back and work with this group that we've got.
John, I have to tell you, I thought the draft was a huge success in terms of the virtual environment. I mean, it was amazing to me what everybody pulled off. But, it was different for everybody. We saw a lot of families. We saw inside houses. How was your family involved? What was it like on draft night in your household?
It was different. It's something that we weren't, we've never done before. So to have my girls there with me, my oldest Taylor and Bailey, they captured some stuff on social media for our fans, some behind the scenes stuff, to give them a peek about what the draft room looked like. From a technical standpoint, our IT, our video, and our operations staff did an outstanding job. I thought the setup that the league had in place was excellent. There were no glitches from a tech standpoint. If you wanted to make a trade, you could pick up the phone and get through. And it was really an impressive feat to pull it off. I had my doubts early, but as we went through the mock calls and the mock drafts internally with our team here, the Titans, and then with the entire league, I couldn't been more pleased with the way the tech ran.
Yeah, I got to tell you, I think our biggest problem may be there was a lot of that I liked. We'll see what we keep going forward, but really amazing that there was no major technical glitch. Well, congratulations. It's in the rearview mirror. We look forward to watching what the Titans come up with in 2020.
Thanks so much, Wendy. You guys have a great day. Stay safe.
Hello, this is your apartment. I need some favors from you. Your cat keeps rubbing against the kitchen island, and I can't return the favor. Can you give her extra pets for me? After that, could you bundle your renters and car insurance with Geico? We could save money, and it's easy to do online. And one last thing. Could you leave the TV on during the day? I need to catch up on my soaps.
Geico. For bundling made easy, go to geico.com today.
Well, today marks the 40th anniversary of the first televised NFL draft. What we saw last week was both historical and memorable for a number of reasons, It all started on April 29th, 1980, when ESPN president Chet Simmons had a vision for what would become eventually one of the best reality shows on television. It certainly has, and it's been a while, but comparing 1980 to today, the price of gas, $1.19 a gallon, highest grossing movie, Star Wars Episode V, The Empire Strikes Back, and defensive end Julius Peppers was just 3 months old when the draft occurred. While 2020 looks a little different, gas is only up 58 cents. Julius Peppers has the fourth most sacks since it became an official stat in 1982. The Eagles drafted Jalen Hurts in the second round of this 2020 NFL draft, becoming the highest quarterback to be drafted by Philadelphia since Carson Wentz in 2016. Wentz currently under contract through 2024. Dan Hurts, a little bit of a surprise pick by Philly. How could you see him being used right away?
Well, I'd expect them to put both Carson Wentz and Jalen Hurts on the field at the same time and certainly be able to run multiple RPOs in any given play. And so everyone continues to say, well, Jalen Hurts is going to be the next Taysom Hill. I kind of see him as a version of Cordell Stewart. Cordell Stewart's first year, he had 7 attempts. He had 15 carries. He had 14 catches. His second year, he had 30 attempts passing the ball. He had 40 carries and 17 catches. I see the Eagles putting both of these quarterbacks on the field at the same time, using Jalen Hurts as a weapon, and it being really difficult for defenses to stop.
Certainly makes some sense. Mike, do you like the fit?
I do, for a lot of the similar reasons. He actually reminds me of another player, Brad Smith, somebody who had at the New York Jets, where he was a versatile weapon. His first year, he had 18 rushes. He had 9 receptions. He really did become a quarterback in the league, but he played for a long time, ironically, in part with Philadelphia. But we got to remember, Carson Wentz also has a durability issue. He's only played in one playoff game, had very limited snaps in that game, Wendy. So I like the fact that Hurts could come in and impact the team immediately as another player, as Dan has done a great job of showing. But also, he may be one hit away from going into the game, and they would have to choose between him and Nate Sudfeld, another quarterback they like. So this pick makes a lot of sense. And to take him where they took him opportunistically in the second round is a world apart of what Green Bay did trading up for Jordan Love in the first round. So this player has a lot of versatility, and he's also – here's the other thing is he's high character and he's a leader. So anytime you can add a player of his ability and his intangibles, that's a great second-round pick.
All right, we saw 4 quarterbacks come off the board in this draft in the first round, 3 of which would go in the top 6. That's only – the third time that has happened in the common draft era. Also the first time 2 quarterbacks from the SEC, in this case Burrow and Tua Tagovailoa, both taken in the top 10 of a single draft. Mike, if and when, and I think we will have a season, any of these first-round quarterbacks starting games early in the year?
I think what's really important is the answer is no, and we haven't talked enough about this, Wendy. There's a huge acclimation period that would be going on. Ordinarily, we'd be flying in the player and their parents this weekend for an orientation. This is the first job a lot of these players have. They have to get an apartment. They have to find out how to get to the facility. They got to learn their coaches' names, the trainer, the doctor. They have to get to know their teammates. And they are literally learning a new language. And it's going to take some time. And when you talk about the veteran quarterbacks in Andy Dalton, Ryan Fitzpatrick, Tyrod Taylor, who goes back to Buffalo with Coach Lynn, and obviously the great Aaron Rodgers, they have such an institutional head start over these quarterbacks. I think we have to collectively manage Tua, Burrow, Herbert, Love. If they don't play this year, that's not necessarily an indictment on their ability. It's just the facts of where we are in the world. So those 4 veteran quarterbacks, in my estimation, should probably start the entire season.
General manager Mike T, this is something we hear every year from you general managers. You find the excuse why these guys aren't going to start, and then guess what happens, Mike? They start every single time. What did we hear with Blake Bortles? Remember, he was going to sit out the entire year like that as a 3rd overall pick. That didn't happen. I'm sure you said the same about Mark Sanchez too, right, Mike T?
Well, that one worked out okay. But it's really about this is different, Jeff. I would say that ordinarily, but this time I actually mean it because of the pandemic. You're not actually in the building.
I mean, first of all, Darlington's taking shots at Mike T.
Oh, Dan, go ahead.
I can drop a tannenbaum too.
Yeah. Wendy, I think that there's 2 out of these 4 guys that can and will start this year. I would say that Joe Burrow can start the season and opening day as their starter. One, because of the way he was taught at LSU. One of the big things with their offense was understanding protections, where the pressure was going to come, who's your answer with the hot route if it's needed, and then just how much empty they used and him understanding the ability to see the full field and finding matchups and seeing leverage. That is a really big deal for quarterbacks as they transition to the NFL. And the Bengals offense does not demand a lot out of the quarterback pre-snap. It's a lot on the center, so that'll help him. And then I can see Justin Herbert playing. You know, the Chargers are such a healthy roster. I mean, that is a top three defense. They've got weapons on the outside at tight end, two new pieces on their offensive line, and a versatile tailback. And Justin Herbert, again, is a guy who's very intellectual. He's smart enough to pick up the X's and O's of a playbook, and that team is not going to ask him to do a ton. Tyrod Taylor may play well, but I do think he's capable of going in there and playing this year and playing good, sound football, because they're not going to need to score 30 points a game to win. I have been adamant Tua should not play this year. I'm going to say that all year. And then I would be shocked if the Packers put Jordan Love on the field.
All right, Mike, anything before we go? We'll let you have the last word here.
Yeah. Darren and I, it's a rare agreement. You know, we certainly see it the same way. Yeah, exactly. But again, it all serves
as an agreement at all. He said that Herbert will play.
We'll take it close enough.
Well, he may not start. No, but in all seriousness, I think it's really important to understand, guys, that because of this pandemic, these players, it's their first job. It's the first time they're going away from school, that it's going to take a minute. And that doesn't even mean what it turns out, learning the opposing defense and things like that in terms of game plan specific. I'm just talking about getting to the city and getting acclimated. I think this is going to take a while for these guys.
All right. He said it before. This time he says he means it. Noted, Mike Tannenbaum. Noted. After leading the league in passing yards and also interceptions, Jameis Winston, now officially a member of the New Orleans Saints. He signed a one-year deal worth about $1 million, according to our Field Yates. Here's Jameis from less than an hour ago.
Who that? When you have opportunity to work with a coach who is as successful and as smart as Sean Payton, and work with a quarterback who, whenever he decides to retire, he's going to probably get escorted to the Hall of Fame. I don't think you really can beat that. If you believe in the ability that you have, if you believe in really, if you have faith that you will become a starting quarterback again, you take this opportunity in a heartbeat to work with these amazing group of men.
Last season, Winston led the league in passing yards. He also had the second most passing touchdowns, but he also, as you know, threw 30 interceptions, including 7 pick sixes. His new teammate, Drew Brees, has only thrown 32 interceptions in the last 4 seasons combined. The 49ers have had a busy offseason, trading their defensive tackle DeForest Buckner to the Colts for their 2020 first-round pick. In turn, they took D-tackle Javon Kinlaw. They continued their trading ways when they picked up Trent Williams during the draft. According to ESPN's pass block metrics, he had the 7th highest pass block win rate among offensive tackles in 2018. And finally, offensive tackle Joe Staley decided to retire his 6 Pro Bowl selections, ranking him 6th among 49 Niner players since 70.
But it was very mixed emotions throughout this whole entire thing, because obviously I did not want to quit playing football. Still have a huge love for it. It's going to be a weird transition going into retirement, because it wasn't a thing where I was like, all right, this is going to be my last year, I'm going to be done. But it was just the right decision for me. So I think because of that, it was really hard for me. And I think it'll probably be hard going forward. But it was the right decision for me, and it was the right decision for my family.
New on NFL Live from our Packers reporter Rob Domofsky. Brett Favre just now on the Rich Eisen show that he's spoken to Aaron Rodgers about Packers' decision to pick Jordan Love. I'm not going to talk about all that we talked about. Favre said he was, let's just say, surprised they went in that direction. He continued to say, I think Aaron will finish somewhere else. That's my gut. Guarantee you it's that he's wheels turning, and this has gotten wheels turning in Aaron's mind. If that's the case, it means there's a chip on his shoulder toward the organization that was not there. Oh, boy. Gentlemen, here we go. You knew it was coming, Dan Orlovsky. Your thoughts? Clearly, Brett Favre referencing the fact that Aaron Rodgers is less than pleased.
Yeah, I've said since the Jordan Love pick and really the 62nd pick of A.J. Dillon that we're going to have a Tom Brady New England Patriots situation where they kind of hung him out to dry in a way with the lack of weapons around him. There's a saying, what you do speak so loudly, I need not hear what you say. And of the five older or aging quarterbacks that are in the NFL, Aaron Rodgers, Ben Roethlisberger, Phillip Rivers, Tom Brady, and Drew Brees, Aaron was the only one that didn't get immediate help, whether via free agency or the draft. Rivers got Michael Pittman, and Brees got Tristan Wirfs, and Roethlisberger got Chase Claypool, and Brees got Emmanuel Sanders and Cesar Ruiz in the draft. So, like, Aaron Rodgers got nothing. And now the Packers have made it clear that, you know, they're not focused on trying to make one final run with Aaron Rodgers. They're in many ways looking towards the future. And that's not going to sit well with a guy that is as calculated, as intelligent, and as competitive as Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah, I see it very similar to Dan from this standpoint. It's actually ironic. We traded for Brett Favre a number of years ago at the Jets once Aaron Rodgers took over for him. And Brett felt like it was time. He had a great run in Green Bay. It was time to move on. And I understand why the Green Bay Packers would want to address the backup quarterback situation. That makes a ton of sense to me. But there's a time and there's a place. And this wasn't the time and this was not the place. They just gave Aaron Rodgers a substantial contract extension. And unlike Brett Favre, back when we traded for him in 2008, it was Brett's contract was much more of a tradable situation than Aaron is. So therefore, he's the quarterback Aaron Rodgers is. This year, next year, the earliest Jordan Love can start would be in 2022. So that's why it makes no sense to me. And to Dan's point, it's exacerbated that they traded a fourth-round pick. So again, Aaron Rodgers fell into their lap going back 15 years ago. This was much more of a proactive move by the Packers, and it makes no sense to me when you're in the Final Four, you're in desperate need of a right tackle because Brian Bulaga left via free agency. You know you need a receiver. It's a historic draft for a receiver, and you come away with neither. So I understand why Aaron Rodgers, the world-class competitor, is feeling the way he is right now.
You know, the only thing that, first of all, by the way, can we acknowledge how twisted it is that Brett Favre and Aaron Rodgers are getting on the phone talking about Jordan Love? Like, in 15 years from now, is Aaron Rodgers going to be talking to Jordan Love and Jordan Love be upset that someone was drafted in the first round by the Packers? Like, what is going on? But beyond that, like, I just think that when we this, and first of all, we should point out that I've talked to Matt LaFleur and I understand what his thinking was before. I've seen some reports that he's the one who's tired of Aaron Rodgers. Like, that is not the case at all. If you're going to put this on anybody, put it on management. But this is not Matt LaFleur saying that he's ready to move on from Rodgers. And that could really have an impact on the relationship if that's not understood very clearly. So beyond that, though, the only thing that is interesting to me, and I'm kind of playing devil's advocate because I completely understand why Aaron Rodgers upset here. But as Mike T just pointed out, they gave Aaron Rodgers a huge lucrative contract. And I know guys still deserve weapons around them. Tom Brady, Drew Brees, all these guys. That said, it is also up to Aaron Rodgers to lift those players around him up. That's why he's paid the big bucks. So it's not an ideal situation. I don't think they should have done it. But now it's time for Aaron Rodgers to do exactly what I believe he will, and that is elevate himself to an unprecedented level.
Well, I agree with you, Jeff. He'll elevate, but he will not be pleased about it, and that will factor in at some point as well. But it'll be interesting to watch, that's for sure. Well, we saw all sorts of crazy things during the draft, including Bill Belichick's dog. He was a breakout star. He was in front of Belichick's computer when the camera cut to the house. And here's Belichick's significant other, Linda Holiday, explaining to Adam Schefter what happened.
I worked with the Patriots IT people, and I said, teach me. I'll do lighting. I'll do IT. I'll do it all. So I'm doing lighting, and Bill had a couple of treats that were left over near his laptop, and he'd stepped away from the table. And all of a sudden, he looks at me and goes, look at the table. And there. Nike was just sitting there waiting patiently, and he knew his treats were there. So that's what prompted him getting up to the table, and he was just waiting patiently for the word to take his treats.
Who's right here?
All right. Oh, gosh. Oh, here we go. Who, Dan, I can't see your head, but I can tell. Who's that?
That's Nash.
We got, oh, Larry. I see Mike Tanner. Jeff, you got no love, buddy.
We got Larry here.
See you soon.